Hello and welcome to Gravel Notes with David Evans. That's me, and for once I am not alone. And I've actually invited back. The last time we heard from this bloke, he was misdirecting me round a car park in Spain. We were almost lost looking for hire cars. It's Colin Clark. It's the voice of Rally is back with us. Hello, Colin.
Hi, David. It's lovely to be back. I just have to say, David, it is lovely to be back. I just have to say, you are never alone, ever. I'm always at the end of the phone. You're never alone.
Yeah, if I'm reaching out for you, Cole, I think I'm more than alone, aren't I, really? We both know that. So this is going to be the last Gravel Notes of the season, so we better do a bit of a review. How are you anyway, Cole?
Really good, thank you. I've had a little bit of a cold, David, which I don't often get ill.
It's
not ideal, but the timing is good. Yeah. Come back from Australia. I was in Australia.
Is that a dirty tissue you've left on the arm of the chair?
It's not a dirty tissue, no. It's my tissue, though. Just ignore it.
Good.
I came back from Australia. I was covering the Alpine Rally in Australia, which was...
Was that the one with all the snow?
That was Targa High Country. I did that one as well. But the Alpine Rally was incredible. Do you know it's the fourth oldest motorsport event in the world?
Really?
Yeah, the next running is 100 years that it's been running for, which is just quite incredible. An amazing rally, based not too far from Melbourne. But would you believe, David, we had stages cancelled because of bushfires, and as we know, Australia really struggling with some quite unusual weather just now. Stages cancelled because of bushfire, and then stages cancelled because of horrendous rain and flooding. Two extremes. As a rally organiser, how do you deal with that? Well, these guys did. They had 150 of the most wonderful Australian classic rally cars there, and they put on a rally, even with those terrible things that they had to deal with. And yeah, enjoyed it. Great. Came home. The minute I got home,
got struck down.
Yeah. Not quite with man flu, but not far off it.
But that can be long haul flight for you, can't it?
Can be. There's been a few of those this year.
There has. But anyway, moving on. We're always a joy to talk about Australia and the absolute tragedy that we didn't get to Rally Australia, get to Coffs this year, and you know it's still terrible to think we'd come to the end of the season without going there.
The end of a tenure. They looked after the WRC in Australia, and they looked after us for what, 7 years? Something like that, 6 or 7 years. Coffs Harbour was a fabulous place to run a round of the World Rally Championship.
If I could just say, if we could agree that you don't ask me these questions without informing me before about how long 7 years...
Yeah, sorry. I've sorry. Yeah, 2012, I think. 2012 was the first year we went
there. I'm
pretty
good at making myself look stupid, so just think between us,
what I've learned over the years is generalisation. Oh, if you're never quite sure, be very vague and very general. But Coffs Harbour was a wonderful host for the Australian round of the WRC, and
To start with, but it became.
It really did, and I think people warmed to it. Clearly, it didn't quite suit everyone's agenda. But you know, the good news, David, is that we didn't get to say goodbye probably to Coffs, which was the right decision, no question about that. But you know, they're planning a motorsport festival for Coffs Harbour next year. There'll be a rally, there'll be a round of the Asia Pacific, the final round of the Asia Pacific. They're planning on doing a hill climb, they're doing some circuit stuff. It's going to be a week celebrating Australian motorsport in Coffs Harbour.
But just keep talking, so I'm going to go and find a copy of MN, this week's Motorsport News.
Yeah, and it really is very good, this week's Motorsport News, because it's a festive issue, isn't it? And it's got David's review of the year. It's got my top 10 drivers for the year.
That is why I have just gone and rummaged through the desk to find it. Because I do think we should. You've done your top 10 in MN, and I've obviously done mine in Autosport. So I think we should compare the two. That's a good place to start.
Well, you know, we did this last year, David. I'll take you back 12 months. You unfortunately didn't quite understand the brief of a top 10. And I seem to recall you did it.
Wouldn't be the first time I've been confused, would it?
You did a top 11 because you couldn't separate two drivers. Your drivers joined.
Do you know, I did exactly the same this year. I had two joined. And the Kev, the editor of Autosport, Kevin Turner, the great Kevin Turner, wouldn't let me. He made me split them.
No, quite right too. But if we're going to talk about top 10s, let's talk about then my rationale for doing the top 10. I am not talking about the drivers who finished 1 to 10 in the World Rally Championship this year.
Nope.
You know, a driver doesn't appear in my top 10 because that really does take out so many different factors. You know, someone who has only done 3 or 4 events, as say Gus Greensmith did, but set times like he did in Finland on that first morning, for me that's enough to get into my top 10. It's a top 10 of drivers that have impressed in 2019, not necessarily the top 10 drivers who I think are the best 10 drivers in the world.
Yeah, no, I think that's...
And that's how I look at it when I put my top 10s together. You know, it'd be the easiest thing in the world.
You're not really... I'm not sure that's the way it should be, because, you know, you're just looking at a real snapshot then. You look at Finland, you're not looking across the spread of the year. But
I am. I'm looking at the three events you did.
That's a three-event snapshot.
But that's fine, because he impressed me in those three events in 2019. We aren't talking the fastest drivers.
No,
if you want to write a brief for me next year and talk about the 10 fastest drivers of 2019, I'll do that for you. Okay. 2020, as it will be.
Indeed. So, number one and number one, Ott Tänak. That was a bit of a slam dunk, wasn't it?
You couldn't possibly go with anyone else. You know, he's been knocking on the door for the last couple of years. Tänak was imperious this year. He really barely put a wheel wrong. Oozed confidence. He really did in his own ability. The only thing that he lacked confidence in was the car, quite clearly. There were issues there. But Tänak was a step above everyone. And, you know, point that I make in my little brief bit about Tänak is that, you know, without the very obvious problems he had with the reliability, he'd have been champion three rallies before the end of the year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tänak at number one, shoo-in.
Ogier at number two. First year in how many? In 7 years. It's obviously 6 years as champion. You have kind of got your arm around me a little bit there.
It's quite close, isn't it? I'm very sorry. Well, just to set the scene, David, we're in your rather luxurious office, and you've got this wonderful leather Chesterfield in your office.
Yeah, it's all very comfortable.
It is very lovely.
Let's not get too comfortable. There's
a degree of separation between
us. Let's maintain that gap. Ogier, it was 2012 was the last year, and obviously he was in the Skoda. So not really a representative year, but so first year, six times as a champion, and then he comes to this year and he's not even second.
No.
Third in the championship, yet we've both put him second in our top tens. Why is that?
Well, I think because it was such a different challenge for him this year, and the challenge, you know, he had a challenge when he went to M Sports to get the car to his liking. He had a challenge this year to get the car working, not to his liking, but just to get it working, and they never got there. You know, with M Sport, there was very much progression, and you could see the progression during those first three or four rallies.
And I think they started at a higher level anyway.
They did. I totally agree with you. Next year, he will be better equipped with Toyota because of the challenges he faced this year with Citroën.
There's no doubt he won in spite of the car. Didn't he? Not because of the car.
No,
he kind of pulled that car along and got it across the line many times.
But it was a baffling year in many ways for Ogier at Citroën. You know, the inconsistencies in the car were almost inexplicable. But I think the car was just so much on the margin when it was engineered that the slightest change to one part element of performance affected adversely. Something else. So you would get a part right, you know, the suspension, the steering, the traction, the torque, you would get that right, but then something else would go wrong.
But equally, I think now, as Citroën has now gone through the door, it's left the building, and we are now beginning to talk to a few more people and find out more about what was clearly a lack of development budget through 16. And, you know, Chris Meek was trying to do the job with an arm tied behind his back. Clearly there were fundamental flaws with that car. It improved. We saw Rosberg last year come to the car in Finland, led Finland early on and finished second, I think, and was really strong. So they made a good step with the geometry there. And at times this year, they made a good step, you know.
Yeah, they're
Mexico. Okay, Mexico is running.
But this is what I'm talking about, the inconsistency.
Yeah.
You went from Finland to Germany, and they were woeful.
Yeah, but I was talking about last year. Osberg.
Oh, last year. Okay,
yeah, but you're quite right. And then, you know, you talked to Lappi before Finland, and he was completely at sea.
Mm.
And then suddenly they managed to find this setup that worked for Esa-Pekka, and it gave him confidence under braking, and the speed was there in Finland.
Bizarre.
But Germany was, you know.
Germany was woeful, and then horrendous. They came back with a wonderful result, their best result of the season in Turkey.
But, you know, for me, you look at Monty and Turkey, they're lotteries. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need the fastest car in Monte Carlo. You need a comfortable car that gives you confidence. In Turkey, you need a car that's got plenty of durability.
And a driver with a little bit of a brain.
Yeah.
A driver that can actually take that sort of approach, which is just, well, you know, and we saw it with Tänak last year in Turkey. Tänak, remember, had the old Toyota. in Turkey last year.
Yes,
and
exactly.
He very much went into the event
with the mentality of taking it steady.
I'm going to win here through guile and through intelligence. I'm not going to win with pace. And I think Ogier and, to a lesser extent, Lappi had the same approach in Turkey this year. It paid off handsomely.
It did.
You know, but see, the inconsistencies I find very odd with that car. The ups and downs, you know, peaks and troughs were massive.
Certainly, and when you looked at what they did, I mean, Germany was a huge low point. I wasn't there in Germany this year, but it was a shocker to look from afar and see, you know, a world champion struggling.
And his stage end comments were telling, weren't they? Was on the final day, I think, the first stage, the second stage. I don't think I was at the end of it. I think it was the stage before I was at, where he said, this car is completely undrivable. And it reminded me, very sadly, of the Solberg days with Subaru. Remember the last days in 2008? Was it 2008?
Yes.
And, you know, Solberg, it was just, you know, Solberg was a different driver, but it's similar in that he was a world champion. But to see someone so lost, you know, in something that they are just absolute masters of, with Solberg was desperately worrying, and to see that with Ogier was a sign, I think, of things to come.
Do you know what's worrying me, Cole? Is that we are now, what are we now, 12 minutes in,
right, and we're at number two,
and we've agreed on those two. This is where we diverge slightly. I've obviously gone with Thierry Neuville because he was the third best driver in the championship this year. For some unknown reason, you've gone for Danny Sordo.
You know, I don't like to be too hard on Thierry, but for me, again, you know, Neuville had everything. He had everything he could want this year to win the championship.
Yeah.
You know, he had 100% the support of his team.
Yeah.
He did have the pressure, and it's a point I make, he had the pressure of anchoring that team's quest to win the manufacturer's title. And that,
nobody else really stepped. Okay,
nobody stepped up.
Sordo in Sardinia.
The problem was the start of the year. But strangely enough, you know, again with Thierry, his performance dropped off to the middle and the end of the year. The start of the year, you know, the others faltered, particularly Mikkelsen. You know, the others faltered a touch at the start of the year. But no, I put Sordo at number three because Sordo continues to surprise me, and surprise me in such a lovely way, in that, you know, he is enjoying his driving, and he is proof that you have to be relaxed. You have to be able to enjoy your driving to get the best out of your performances.
Putting him third, how important was that Sardinia win?
Oh, massively. Without the Sardinia win, I wouldn't have...
He looked into it.
Oh, get lost.
Oi Tanak, in the final stage... For goodness sake, I mean, you have just completely undermined your top 10.
That's a bit like,
if
then,
the power
that's
steering
a bit
hadn't
like,
failed,
so that's a
it
bit
would have been
like,
second.
That's a bit like nonsense. Tommy Mäkinen lucked into the win where Carlos Sainz broke down in Morgan Park.
Exactly.
Did he heck? Because
I'm glad
he went
that
through
the
whole
wavelength.
Season. You know, it's for me, Sordo had to be there, and Sordo was there. Sordo was there through the whole rally. You know, that's
but he was
rally.
Nowhere. He was
it's
nowhere
rally.
On pace.
What do you mean he was nowhere on pace?
He was
second.
He was slaughtered by Tanak.
Friday, no, Tanak was slaughtering everyone.
Yeah,
with pace. But your Tanak
so where would,
didn't
where
win.
Would Sordo have been without
Tanak? Didn't win
without
Sordo
the win.
Won.
Where would Sordo have been in the top 10 for you?
Without the win, I might have put him down at about number 5 or 6.
Yeah, or 7 or 8, or 11.
No, I wouldn't have put him down there because you look at his performance. He delivered in terms of he led rallies. He was right up there on day one.
7.
And I like his attitude.
I'd have agreed with 7.
Well,
but actually,
did, at the end of the day, you know, he did win, and I
agree.
At number 3 because
he had pace in Portugal. And he could have won in Portugal. He led in Portugal.
And
he's
the car
always
let
good
him
in
down.
Portugal. Yeah.
Mexico, car let him down.
Yeah, true.
You know,
true.
Again, he could have had easily another 2 or 3 podiums this year.
Elvin at 4 for me and 5
for
you.
And I struggled to put Elvin at 5 in terms of performance. How could you possibly put him at 4 in terms of performance? How could you possibly
should
put him
there? Should have won Corsica.
That is the only reason.
Should
have won Corsica.
Took 3 events out with a pretty hefty back injury. Bounced back in Wales and could have won Wales.
No, he couldn't.
Of course he could.
No, he couldn't.
And scored podiums in two rounds.
Right.
Consistency. He gets there inconsistency.
So,
but, you know,
so without that, could have won in Corsica. Now, don't forget, he didn't win. Could have won in Corsica. Where would Elvin have been in yours?
It's still a. He maybe would have dropped
no,
down.
No, you need to be consistent in your arguments, David.
Could have been 5.
You are so
maybe
inconsistent.
5.
Because the problem you have is that at times, you are the world's greatest motorsport journalist. I'm elevating you to that now. You've always been the world's greatest rally journalist. But you lack consistency. You can't criticise my third place for Sordo. because he won, and then put someone in fourth because he could have won.
But Elvin was more consistent. He was more consistent.
Consistently mediocre. I'll tell you why I put him at five. Because, and this is where Elvin Evans...
Because I put pressure on you to put him at five.
A little bit of that. But also because, you know, he did have those three rallies out. He did have to sit and watch while others were staking their claim for seats. He came back and he was consistent and he was good. He was good. And he managed to score off the stages with that remarkable win. And what we can't ignore is the fact that that seat was the most desirable seat in Wrangler. Eight drivers wanted
Toyota
that seat.
The Toyota seat you're talking
that
about.
That Toyota second seat. Yeah. Eight drivers wanted it. He got it. He got it ahead of Breen's. He got it ahead of Mickelson's, ahead of all the other drivers that are sitting saying
that
they
are. And there's people in Toyota... You know, there's people like Kai Lindstrom and Tommy Mäkinen and all of these people who know a huge amount more than we do, and they've given it to him, and they've seen something. And you know, there is still concern with Elvin that Spain, places like this, that you know, there wasn't the immediate spark to get in there and get on the pace. And for me, the year coming up in the Yaris is going to be huge for him. He has a massive, massive opportunity.
He has to deliver. There's a lot of pressure to deliver. I'll tell you why there's pressure to deliver. You know, you're reuniting the team that did so well at M-Sport.
Yep.
But you're also... He's not the rookie anymore because they've got a rookie. They've got Robin Perry there. He has to score, and he has to score big.
Is the delivery, though, for Toyota? Is the delivery to be the perfect wingman for Ogier and to back him up and to step aside? Or is it to get up in his face? You know, probably not win Monty. Have a good shot in Sweden. Try and win Mexico. And then, you know, you level peg him with Ogier early in the year.
I think if he goes into the season thinking that he is going to battle with Ogier at all, he has lost. He has lost and he will lose. We saw it with Meek last year. Meek went into the year thinking he could battle with Tanak. And Meek managed to control that urge to battle through the first four or five rallies. Had the most consistent period he's had in his career. Six rallies with no super rally.
But
he wasn't happy. He was finishing fifth and sixth. Tommy was happy, delivering the points. Then he tries to up his pace. He tries to battle with Tanak. And we saw what happened.
We saw that frustration in Portugal. Two stages from the end when he was second. And he was on. And then he had the half spin.
And I'm getting confused. But anyway, yeah.
He had a half spin. And then got completely frustrated.
Yeah.
And then boiled himself up in the regrouping before the power stage. And then crashed.
You're absolutely right.
And cost the podium.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that was...
Yeah,
it was so frustrating because his season almost pivoted around that moment. Before that, he'd done brilliantly, building himself up slowly.
Yeah.
He was frustrated, I think, because he wasn't on the podium. But you're right. Then, you know, we got to Finland, two crashes in Finland. And he was racing Tanak. And, you know, I remember in the middle of the year, towards the end of the year, actually, talking to Tommy, what do you want from Chris Meek? I want Chris Meek to be Danny Sordo the second. And it was never going to happen,
no.
You know, because unfortunately, and I'm sure, you know, as quiet as Chris has been now, you know, he's not talking to anybody. He would admit that it's not in his character to settle for second in the way that Sordo has. It's just not. He's a fighter.
He's a winner. And he,
but he's not a winner. You know, he's a potential winner.
In his head, he's a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
But you know, I think that's a really good analogy. I think if Evans can go to Toyota and can be a Sordo, to Ogier, then he wins.
But can he be Sordo for a year, and then can he be Ogier the second in the second year of his contract?
Well, you know, there is that possibility.
Yeah.
But you know, he has to make the most of this year, and to make the most of this year, I think he has to do all the right things for Toyota and for Tommy Mäkinen, and that means finishing every rally, finishing every rally well, and being in a position to step up where he's needed. So if Ogier has problems, if there is a situation where you know, potentially Elvin has to outscore Tanak, has to outscore Neuville, you want him to be able to step up and take those risks and do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You know, he has to be looking long-term. And you know, long-term isn't just next year, isn't just 2020, 2021. Long-term for Evans is 3 or 4 years at Toyota.
Yeah.
Leading that team.
Yes.
Leading that team. And that's what he's got to be looking at. So
that, I mean, already you're looking towards the following year, 2021, and if... I'm sure Tanak will make a great start and a great career at Hyundai. And if that's the case, then what does Thierry do? Because suddenly Thierry could be overlooked next year. Does he then potentially move to Toyota? You know, there's plenty of people in the service park already saying, you know, the Toyota deal's done for Thierry in 21. Who knows? But for sure...
First time I've heard it.
No, I mean, talking tongue-in-cheek there.
Right.
But absolutely, Elvin has this massive opportunity next year to lay the foundations.
It's a wonderful opportunity. With a degree of pressure, but no real pressure to win rallies. I think the pressure is to be consistent and consistently support Ogier and to support Toyota in their quest to win the manufacturers again.
So we can definitely book him in for at least four, number four in our top 10.
Put it in already.
Yeah,
put it in
definitely.
Already.
Good lad. Number five for me is Teemu Suninen.
Oh, I mean, who put Suninen into my top.
Had you forgotten about him?
No.
No.
No, I didn't.
Explain
them. Suninen for me is still a work in progress. And I do like Suninen. I was very disappointed on certain rallies with his pace.
Pretty disappointed with that first stage in Monte. Admittedly, difficult left-hand underbraking, full ice, into the ditch.
Into the ditch and then got followed by Rovan Perra.
Yeah.
Very disappointed with his pace on some rallies. You know, I think that M-Sport car, I don't think he showed its full capabilities last year. I think it was way quicker than Suninen was able to demonstrate at times. But he did show glimpses again of what
Germany.
Is it? And Germany and Finland.
Saturday and Sunday and Finland, you know, again, yeah.
You know, and he is a precocious talent. I do like his approach. He is very different. He is very, very self-critical, very analytical.
Big change when we saw Jarmo Leighton and get back in the car as well. I think
there was an instant change.
There was a confidence in the car immediately.
Was.
And that's a bit.
And what he said was, he said, "I am the pupil."
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I felt like I was the teacher.
Yeah. With Marco, you know,
Salmon. And he's right. And that's no. Well, it is a reflection on Marco Salmon.
It is. You know, the guy didn't have enough. It didn't have enough experience
at that speed and at that level.
Yeah.
You know. And when obviously the opportunity was there to sit with. The big fella, you know, it was absolutely the right thing to do. But no, I don't think he performed this year, and I think he would say the same thing. He got experience, he got through rallies, but remember the start of the year, he made so many mistakes. I couldn't find a way of justifying him in my top 10.
Okay, well, I tell you what, actually, we are now 23 minutes in. We've got a fair amount to get through tonight. We've got some interviews coming up after the break, so there might actually be three parts to this one, but we should give it a break now. We'll go and get a cup of tea. You're listening to Gravel Notes with David Evans and, of course, Colin Clark. We will be back in a mo. So there, Col, how was the tea?
Lovely. Earl Grey, beautiful.
Yeah.
With milk.
Not a fan.
A little bit heathen-like, isn't it?
Well, I'm just not a fan of the old Earl Grey. You know, why would you bother with that nonsense? I'm
it's got a lovely, slightly florally bouquet to it, though.
No.
You're not a floral person, no, really,
not,
are you?
Not at all.
You're not in touch with that side of things, are you? You're a beer man rather than a wine man.
I do like it.
It sounded very Clarkson-esque.
I'm a very big fan of anything alcoholic, I've got to say. But no, tea's got to be black English breakfast tea, very straightforward. Served generally with a tonics tea cake. Can't go wrong. Although, absolutely. Actually, at this time of the year, we missed a treat because there should have been at least two mince pies eaten. Where I did a thing a couple of weeks ago about
when... I had a good log.
A what?
Maybe.
Caramel log.
Caramel log. It was lovely.
When did you have your first mince pie?
Crumbs.
September.
No, definitely not. No, I probably had my first pie. I had a lovely one in Australia. It was a mince pie with a crumble, like an apple crumble top on it.
Oh, really?
Really nice. Really nice, with some ice cream.
Ooh, without name dropping, Waitrose are doing some amazing Heston.
Oh, no, that's where, yeah, it was yours. That's right, it was before I went to Australia. Yes, it was at your kitchen table.
Exactly.
Yes, no, I remember.
They're very good, aren't they? With a hint of lemon in.
Oh,
fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you can keep your old grey nonsense. And I'll be, before we go into part three, I will go and have a mince pie. Where did we get up to?
We
did,
Alvin. Way, didn't we?
So, Mickelson.
Second half.
I'd got Suninen at five. You didn't even bother with him.
No.
Six, Lappi. Seven, Lappi for you. There's not that much difference there.
No, I thought Lappi for me still has a massive amount to show and to give.
Yeah.
Whether he'll be at M-Sport next year, well, we may find out this week. We're Wednesday. The story is that perhaps by Friday we'll hear something. I still think he can win rallies. I really do. He's got huge talent. I like his attitude. He did whinge and moan a fair amount this year.
But he was self-critical.
He was.
He moaned a bit about the car, but he moaned as much about himself.
He was very self-deprecating. I think the word I used was charming in a strange way at stage ends. It was quite.
It was.
You felt sorry for the lad, you know, but not in a poor you sort of way, in a, you know, isn't he a lovely lad sort of way, which. Is that a weakness? I'm not sure, but
no, I don't think it is, because you know he then came to Finland, and when he got the kit around him, he rose above it.
He rose above it. Yeah,
and, you know,
he's
in
able
Turkey,
to turn it on.
He could have won Turkey, couldn't he? Sordo, I have at 7. Obviously, that's the right place for Sordo. And you've got Mickelson at 6. Where
I do.
I had him at, and this is one where I might be tempted. I had him at 10. I might be tempted to go with your 6 there, because I think I might have been harsh on him.
What?
He had I was fixated on a terrible start for Mickelson, but then more research. You know, I think he was actually running very well in Monte. Mm-hmm. He led in Mexico, I think. But you know, just had issues and silly mistakes. You know, taking a wheel off in Monte and.
Oh, Monty was just ridiculous. Was ridiculous. He was quick through that stage.
Yeah.
And he was fast in that last corner. And it was a sixth gear corner.
And it,
and
just
it
ran
wasn't
wide,
a cut.
No.
He took a cut, didn't he? Or did he run wide? I can't remember. I was at the end of the stage. But it was one that was an innocuous corner that should have posed no problems. And again, it was a little bit of decision making. You questioned his decision making at times during the year. And he made a bad decision on that corner to try and push. At the wrong point. You know, the great champions, Ogier, Loeb, they know where to take risks. And you take risks where the potential consequence is limited.
You know,
you're taking a risk on a flat-out sixth-gear corner. Mm. You know, we saw it with Neuville a couple of years ago in Monte, the same thing happening when he had a 40-second lead. Mm. You know, it was a sixth-gear corner, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he went to try and push 100%. It a little farther. Ogier on the same rally took a bit of a risk on a very tight slow hairpin, slipped off, got back on again, no real damage. It's all about picking and choosing where you push, where you decide that there's risk that potentially has a bit of paper. And I thought maybe Mickelson made one or two bad decisions, but then I think he redeemed himself. He was humiliated by the team, but that was the way that Adamo worked, and we could talk for ages about Adamo.
And you could then say that he came back from being benched in Corsica to finish second. I'm sorry, you know, he was humiliated, but Adamo was faced with no option.
He had no choice.
He would have looked stupid.
Oh, ridiculous!
If he left Sordo or Loeb out in place of Mickelson, so it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, it was.
And then, you know, you could then say, oh, brilliant decision, great move, because he finished second in Argentina. For me, he kind of looked into that second. There was pace, but there was nothing. And then we got to Chile.
Oh.
Nowhere again, and just embarrassingly nowhere.
Chile was what unfortunately has become very, very frustrating about Andreas Mikkelsen, in that, you know, when he has no confidence, when he has to learn a new rally,
he can't do it.
He can't do it.
And for me, there's issues with the pace notes as well.
I think several
drivers who know a lot more about this have watched the onboard and just feel that the notes, and if you're ever going to get found out, it's on a new rally.
Well, he's actually come out and said something in an interview in Norway this week, saying that he does memorise every single stage.
Yeah, well,
and that's okay for rallies that you know. Forget it when you go to Chile. When we go this year to Africa, when we go to Japan, when we go to New Zealand, you know, if he were starting those rallies, he'd be in trouble. But I thought Mickelson's response after he was benched, when he came back, was really very impressive. And he came back and he scored points, he scored a podium, and his attitude, he never changed. We saw certain drivers getting a little bit arsey.
No, he was good. He was a little bit
difficult with the press, with us.
Because we wrote difficult stories.
We wrote difficult stories and said difficult realities. When you point out realities to people that are difficult, criticisms that are personal at times, but that's the way it is, because they're public figures and they're doing a job that people are asked to comment on. You know, their response to that can be quite telling. Mickelson never once took umbrage. He never got arsey. He just went.
He always shook hands.
And I thought he was an absolute gentleman. And I thought he, and that's not enough to get him into my top 10. But more than that, he knuckled down and he showed some great pace. You know, those final day battles. Remember, he had that final day battle in, where were we? He had a couple of Sunday fights, one with Elvin in Sardinia. And then later on with Ogier, he had that final, and he beat him. You know, he showed real
Was that Turkey?
Great.
Turkey.
I think I can't remember exactly where it was. It wasn't Turkey. No, but I thought he came back very well, and that's why I put him in at number six.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
But not enough. Not enough to get a seat next year, sadly.
It doesn't look like it.
No, I don't.
It absolutely doesn't look like it. So, seven for you, Lappy. Eight for Gus. We've talked a little bit about Gus, which I think is a very good call.
Yeah.
And Calais, nine. Which I don't. I think I focus very much on
WRC. I just kind of thought we had to put him in. I seem to remember you did it last year, and I didn't. So I thought I had to put it in this year. You can't. I mean, the guy was, precociously brilliant
shocking
again.
Shocking start.
Oh, shocking start. But again, and the point I make is this: a little bit of a pattern. He is a slow starter. It was the same in 2018. He had a really difficult start. This was worse this
but
year.
But there was reason for every, that icy patch that caught Sunnan out caught him out as well.
Mm.
Sweden. And, I talk in one of the interviews we've got coming up is with Calais. And I talked to him about that moment in Sweden. And just, for me, that encapsulated so much of his maturity for, what was he then, 18 or 19, 18-year-old. And he went into the snowbank and he just sat there.
I think your interview, which you'll hear shortly, with Rovan Perä is a fantastic interview. And it's telling. Because really, if you didn't know that you were talking to a 19-year-old child...
Oh, you'd never guess.
He is so composed. He is so confident. He is so relaxed. And do you know what? It's the mature approach to everything. Which I find remarkable, that how he deals with the team, how he deals with adversity, how he deals with the expectation that's on him. Just quite remarkable. It's a very, very good interview, David.
Oh, thank you very much, Carl.
Welcome.
You might get another cup of tea in a minute.
Thanks, man. I want a mince pie. I don't want a blooming another cup of tea. I had two already, swimming in it.
That was actually a good call, Callie, at nine. And 10 for you, Sebastian Loeb. You left out Latvala. I can understand why.
I left out Mika, and I left them both out because they all had fantastic opportunity this year. And the reason that Loeb is there, we talk about, or I talk about putting Sordo in at number three because of one result. You put Elvin at number four because of one near result. I'm going to put Loeb in the top 10 because you can't ignore that performance in Chile. It was breathtaking. It was breathtaking. If you remember Chile from Shakedown,
yes.
I was actually coming quite late into Chile, and I phoned, I think it was you, and said, what problem has Ogier, has Loeb had on Shakedown? None. He just can't get the car to his liking.
Yeah, and then suddenly he could turn in with experience.
He on the Friday morning, struggled as well. He lost 45 seconds.
But he was had second the experience not to panic, just to relax and work through the settings, and he found the setup and it worked.
And we've seen Mikkelsen for 2 years there, not able to find the perfect setup in
but
that
what
car.
Worries me a little bit, moving forward with the Hyundai, is that the greatest tarmac driver probably in the history of the whole world couldn't really show it in that car in Corsica or anywhere. I mean,
but I think he's lost his pace against the top guys. I think the pace isn't there.
But surely, if it hasn't, because you look back last year to Spain, he won Spain.
He won Spain because of just the most incredible call on the final day.
Fine, but
and he also made a very good tyre choice, don't forget, on the Saturday that gave him the chance to be right up there. There were two really good calls.
But that's all, it's the big picture, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole package, and he's still got that. He can still make those calls. And I do think that, if the Hyundai is lacking speed anywhere, it probably is on tarmac. But we'll see. So I think that's enough about our top tens. Clearly, I think I've probably got it about right.
I obviously always defer to your greater experience, knowledge, ability, everything.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, we will we'll take another break right now, and we will come back. And what should we talk about?
That
after
was
the break?
A really short section. That was, but,
it was,
but you're quite
wasn't
right.
It?
So, what are we going for this time? Hot chocolate and a mince pie.
Absolutely.
And maybe we'll talk about just the year in general when we come back after the break.
Let's do that. So there we are. We didn't bother with the hot chocolate. Because we need to crack through this now. We've got plenty more work to do. So we've just had a mince pie. It was fabulous. What was your highlight of the year, Cole? Sorry, I've dropped this one on you a little bit.
You have, rather. The highlight of the year was Adamo. Adamo, for me, was... Monsieur Nandon at Hyundai did a great job. A lovely man. But perhaps you know, did things slightly more conventionally.
Yeah.
We had Adamo turn up at the start of the year and instantly put people's backs out, didn't he? Instantly, yep. People thought, who the heck is this guy? I don't like him. And he, you know, and he gave some interesting interviews. He gave some of my colleagues a hard time on WRC Live. You know, he ignored apparently some sort of contract that Mickelson had for doing all the rallies and went, that's not my problem. I make decisions that are best for the team. And he was like a whirlwind, and he was just, you know, he was reinvigorating for everyone around him, for the team, the drivers, the media, everything. And Adamo, for me, was the highlight of the year. A man who's come in with limited WRC experience, it's fair to say.
Yeah, certainly at that level.
But absolute belief that his way was the right way.
Yeah.
You know, no, and everyone would tell you at the start, your rotation is old hat. People have tried that. It doesn't work.
Yeah, he made it work.
He made it work.
By his own admission, they didn't have the fastest car this year.
No,
you just got to look at the stage times, and the Yaris was quicker, but he outthought people. And you know,
tactically, he was brilliant. And you can argue all you like about Portugal, but my good God, he made the right calls in Portugal, and he manipulated. He maneuvered.
No, I put in my review, I put he didn't bend the rules, he didn't break the rules, he played the rules,
which was what motorsport's all about.
Exactly.
Every winner in motorsport has been there because they have made the rules work for them.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Adamo's done. And don't forget, M Sport did a similar thing in the first year with Ogier on a number of occasions, where they used the flexibility that was there. It wasn't obvious in the rules. You had to go looking for it. It took you know, bright people at M Sport to see the opportunities that they utilised, and it took Adamo and his slightly... And he, let me tell you something about Adamo that a lot of people don't realise, is that we talk about Latvala's knowledge of rallying in WRC. We talk about Julian Porter being the rally guru. The man who puts them all in the shade is Adamo.
Yeah.
He knows everything about everything when it comes to rally history. Mm. He is a proper aficionado of rallying. And when you study rallying that closely, you understand the rules. You understand, you see where opportunities are. You understand how you can exploit those opportunities. Mm. As you say, not break the rules, you can exploit the opportunities. And he did it brilliantly. And for me, he was the highlight of the year. And he came to my house and cooked me a rather mediocre, but
moving on. So my highlight would have to be the ceremonial start in Concepcion in Chile. It was I probably won't talk about it for quite as long as you talked about Adamo, but it was a highlight.
Don't invite me to your podcast and expect me to be brief.
No, that's true. No, I shouldn't. How ridiculous. That was great, and it's a real shame. Obviously no Chile next year. Again, for very valid reasons. You know, it's fair to say WRC has been through, you know, the last months. You know, we lost Australia for a very good reason, for a very bad reason, but an understandable reason. Chile's gone equally. You know, it's impossible to conceive running an event. I telephoned. Obviously, difficult to get any real quotes from Chile. So I phoned the guy at the hotel that I stayed in, a really lovely fella. And I called him and said, what's it like? And he said, you would not come here right now. You know, there are fires in the street. It's horrific. So, you know, we simply couldn't commit. I know it wasn't until April, but it's unacceptable to go there and essentially show the wealth of the WRC in front of all of these people who are arguing over, a price rise of a metro ticket in Santiago or something. So that's gone. Citroen's gone. That, you know,
Michelin's gone. Well, we don't know, but Michelin have put out a very cryptic tweet this week.
Yeah, very strange.
Very strange.
Waving
goodbye with the WRC car. If they've gone,
The significant consequences, and then, you know, there's this discussion of Skoda. Has Skoda gone? Mm-hmm. Skoda hasn't gone, but, you know, it's not running a factory team in WRC2 next year. And it's, you know, there is... We talked about this a couple of days ago, and you said, you know, all of those things are not linked in any way. They're all entirely independent of each other, and they are completely. But it's still built up to a pretty miserable month.
Oh, listen, when you put it that way, when you listed all those things, because you said, is there a crisis? And my view is that there is not a crisis. My view is that
there's not a crisis.
There's not a crisis because these things aren't linked. You know, for me, Citroën were never fully committed to the WRC.
No,
never fully
committed.
You're right there.
It certainly wasn't what they did, you know, when you go back 10, 15 years.
They didn't put the money into the development. They certainly then didn't put the money into the testing.
No.
We had drivers and co-drivers turning up to Monte Carlo Rally wearing the same overalls they were wearing the year before, which apparently is unheard of. I think back to when
they were running Mazara, the C4, and when Guy Frecklin was there, no expense spared. Yeah. You know, there was hotels for everybody. There was, you know, there was private planes.
Do you know the
going
one
about
thing
the
that
place?
Got me? You know, I once flew business class back from New Zealand. Once, I think I got an upgrade. Must have done, because I certainly wouldn't have paid for it. And the whole of business class was full of Citroën people. Full of them. And it seemed that anyone above perhaps a certain level
was
business class.
Yeah.
When we came back from Chile, Monsieur Boudard in the back of the plane.
Yeah.
In the back of the plane. At that point, you think, budgets are tight.
Yeah,
budgets
and that's
are
the
really
point.
Tight.
You know, it doesn't matter where you sit on the plane. You know, there's a lot of people that would always travel. Judy Murray never travels in business class. What's
Good
the point?
She's Scottish.
She's Scottish. There's a link.
I get that. But having said that, Richard Miller also sat in the back of the plane. So we had two team principals in the back of the plane, which I thought was
fantastic. It was definitely a reflection of budget.
It was budget. It was commitment. You know, that it's not, you know, the WRC is no less attractive in terms of its commercial value today than it was before Citroën pulled out.
It's not, because, you know, I talked to Yves Maton about this a couple of days ago, and we will still have a number of World Rally cars. I don't know that we'll miss Citroën. We will miss the fact that they're not in the service park, but, you know, through these B teams, these second teams, the WRC teams that they're called, we will see
more cars. I think we miss opportunity for drivers and for young drivers. And, you know, the thing is, what we have now, we have to make do with for the next 2 years. No one is going to come in this year.
No.
This coming year. No one is going to come in the year after. And there is always the chance we might lose another team. You know, how Malcolm Wilson continues to keep things going, I find remarkable. He is the most phenomenal operator, and the fact we're very lucky that he has managed to keep things going. But you have to say that must be a very difficult decision for Malcolm every single year. So I've not heard anything.
No,
next year I'm sure
I'm
now talking about 2021. So things may get worse in terms of the number of cars, the number of opportunities before they get better. But what we have to do, there can be no dithering, there can be no ambiguity, there can be no uncertainty about these new regulations. They can't be astronomically expensive. They have to be contained within a budget.
But they
have to be clear, and if they're clear for 2022, we will get new manufacturers. I think that is as much of a given as you will get in motorsport. It is attractive
It's attractive, and now B, you know, with the potential for building a tubular chassis, again, a space frame chassis, you know, it's made it easier because you're not hamstrung by having to run these production cars. So definitely the FIA has opened that up, and it's made it easier than ever. You know, you go back to 97 when we first had World Rally cars, we're back there again, which is fantastic. But much as Maton bangs the drum of keeping the costs down, still a car, you know, a World Rally car today will cost you £750,000. 2022, it's got to be £1 million. You know, and that's just insane, because we can't bring in this hybrid without the additional cost. And then, you know, you can't, the prospect of privateer drivers being able to run, they can't run the current cars because they can't afford them.
Drivers.
Forget them.
We really are writing off privateer drivers.
But what we're doing,
which is a shame, a real shame, because it's really part of the essence of WRC.
It is. And what Maton's trying to do is shift the emphasis away from WRC cars, the so-called the new Rally 1. They're moving them to Rally 2, which is WRC 2, WRC 3. You're looking confused, which is a worry. So a Rally 2 is the old R5.
Yeah.
And that the ultimate aim in 5 years is to have 20 manufacturer-backed cars on the start line. So that there could be 10 World Rally cars, and then there's 10 factory WRC 2 cars, which we pretty much, I mean, we had Skoda, M Sport, Citroën with Osberg occasionally.
We hear that there's a Toyota R5 car in the pipeline. And the Hyundai, you know, the Hyundai team, I think, will come back with a proper supported R5 car. I can see that happening as well. Now, I like the direction that Maton's going in, but, you know, there is, there is precedent for series, FIA supported series, where they have got it wrong. They have dithered.
Yeah.
They have been, you know, just way too flighty in terms of their
we've got it wrong with WRC. We're 2 years too late. As, you know, Jean Todt said.
Well, no, I don't think we are too late.
We are, Cole. You know, 2022, and we still were just getting hybrid then? Really? You know, how long has it been in Formula One? Probably a decade by then. I can't remember exact dates,
yeah.
But
okay,
you know,
no,
the fact that,
yeah,
even World Rallycross, you know, missed its moment last year.
Yeah.
We weren't even, I'm sure we were thinking about it.
It's such a different challenge for rallying, but this is where rallying, I think, will
nonsense.
Win.
Nonsense. How is it?
Oh, for goodness sake, it is a very different challenge.
How long?
Roundy, roundy wing.
Fine.
Formula E, when they started, you could swap cars halfway through the blooming race.
All of this nonsense, you know? About, you know, we're worried about taking cars to altitude or running them through rain. How many years have you seen Toyota Yaris has been driven in the rain? Yeah. It can work.
No, it can work.
We've hidden behind this for far too long.
Maybe I'm making excuses. We have been, but we're now at a critical point where we can no longer be seen to be behind the game. And we have to be very, very clear about your, not just a 2, a 5, a 10-year plan. A 10-year plan, I think, is what we should be looking at.
Yeah.
You know, I think a 10-year plan is good, and I think manufacturers need to have the confidence of forward thinking.
Mm.
Unless there is coherent forward thinking in terms of where we're going from hybrid to alternative fuel cell, whatever it might be, I'm not convinced that we're going to electric. Not in 10 years' time, I'm really not. Here's what I think. I think we're going nuclear. Genuinely, you laugh.
Really concerning me is, do you think we'll be here? You and I, will we still be?
We'll
talking
be sitting
about
on the city, you know, arguing and
will?
Following out, and you know, all the rest in 10 years.
Ten years.
I'm pretty confident we will be
still arguing about our top tens.
That would be good, but you know, we just have to have a very clear road path of where we're going, and the manufacturers are desperate to throw money. You know, but they need confidence that they're throwing their money in the right direction.
This is the frustration for me, is that there is nowhere better for a manufacturer to bring a car and say, look, Extreme E, look what they're doing. And they're trying to take it off-road, trying to make it edgy. Mm. We are that championship. You know, we're the ones that go to minus 30, to plus 40, to rocky roads, to high altitude roads, to fast roads, to slow roads, to blah, blah, blah. We do it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are the ultimate laboratory. And nobody's used us for.
We're a laboratory, we're a testing ground, we're a proving ground, we're all of those things. And you know, they've not used it for that for decades because they've not had the opportunity. You know, the last, I don't know what the last big innovation that was championed by rallying, but four wheel drive clearly came about because of rallying. You know, flappy paddles, well, that was rallying as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So there's a lot there, and it has stalled a little over the past decade or so.
It has.
Only because we've not given the manufacturers the opportunity. The opportunity is golden, David, and it is there. The golden goose is just squawking at the FIA, saying, I want to lay an egg.
Do you know, I thought you were going to say squatting.
It's squatting over Eve Matton, waiting to lay the golden egg.
Right.
But he needs to be ready to catch it.
It's coming. Talking of 10 years on, the one person who for sure will be here in 10 years and probably will be a 4, 5, 6-time world champion in 10 years is Kalle Rovanperä. So we talked about his interview earlier. Here it is. This is what Kalle Rovanperä had to say to me earlier, or actually last week. So joining me now is Kalle Rovanperä. Kalle, we are at the end of your Skoda career here, really, aren't we? It's 2 years. We're in Prague this evening and the Motorsport Conference. How does it feel, the end of your two-year journey with the team?
Well, I feel good, of course, because the 2 years has been really nice with Skoda. And of course, it's not always so nice to quit with some team which you have gotten new friends and everything. And it's nice people in the team, and the team is working really hard. But of course, we need to go to WC now next, and we have a next challenge with Toyota, so it will be our next step now.
Yeah, and compare this feeling now with 2 years ago when you first arrived. How was it then? Were you nervous? Was it? I mean, it was a big step, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a proper step to like proper factory team. I would say Skoda is like WC team, but with R5 car.
Yeah,
it's really a professional team, and the level is high. But I was not so nervous. I was still knowing my skills, and I have been working before that. with some proper teams already. So I was not so nervous, but I was really excited to get this career going.
Yeah, and at the beginning of this year, there was a kind of huge expectation that WRC 2 Pro was this new championship, and for me, in many ways, they should have just given the championship to you in January, because there was so much expectation that you would come in and win it very easily. But the first three rounds were complicated, weren't they? It wasn't an easy year this year.
No, it was. I would say this year was more tricky than last year, and that's why I enjoyed more. We was learning more things and more things which are important. And of course, the beginning of the year was not so good, but I all the time knew the reasons for that.
What were the reasons? Tell us.
There is many things, my own mistakes, and then some things from going to new team.
Yeah.
Like in Corsica, there was quite major problems with the team, I would say.
Yes.
With the parts and setup of the car. So of course, it's not affecting on my crash, which ended the race. But like before that, in Friday, we were struggling a lot.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't do anything else than test and try to find some setup for the car, because it was not the right one, what we asked for, basically.
So, you were fighting with the car for the whole rally, weren't you?
Yeah, so there was things what we couldn't do anything about. So I was all the time confident that when everything is going in the way it should, then we are good. I knew that my skills are not gone or anything. It was just a few bad events in the beginning of the season, and there was some reasons what we couldn't affect.
For me, you know, that we talked about this earlier in the year, but that was for me one of the real not surprises, but the way that you dealt with that. And you know, I remember watching the onboard when you went into the snowbank in Sweden.
Yeah.
And you tried reverse, nothing. So you just sat there and waited, and the people came and they pushed you, and you were completely calm. You know, there was no shouting or anything. And this for me is a real demonstration of your maturity. But moving forward in the year, we got to Chile and you worked with TalkSport for the first time. That event really turned a corner for you, didn't it? You won comfortably. And tell me about Chile.
Chile was actually an interesting race. It was a new race in the calendar, and it was actually a really difficult one. There is like many rallies in one weekend.
Yeah.
Each day the stages are changing. So it was really difficult race, and I was enjoying it. It was first time ever with TalkSport, but like when we can see if the team is doing what we ask for, like all the parts and setup and everything is what we want, everything is going well. And I was all the time confident, even after Corsica, that we can do it. It's not a problem. When we just have the right things and everything is going in the right direction, we are still fast and we can win. And in Chile, we saw that we can win.
It worked well with TalkSport as well. Yeah. I mean, it was a step up for them, wasn't it, to run you as a factory driver?
Yeah, I think it was really good for us to have the first win of the season, and it was really good for them to having us winning the race. So it was really nice event with the team, and I really liked the people, really professional team.
Yeah. And then obviously the Evo came along, the new car. And some revenge on Finland for you. But you know, this was your rally last year, and you were robbed of it with the suspension problem. But here it was perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah, this year it was. There was some fast guys in R5s.
Yeah.
But they had also some problems, and we had a clean race. I didn't need to push basically after third or second stage. But for sure, this year it was really nice. It was just enjoying the home rally, enjoying the fans, enjoying every jump and every place what you can drive, and not pushing too much.
Yeah.
And I think it was also good for our team to see that we still have some things to improve.
Yes.
We found, and at least I was saying in the race that we could be faster.
Yeah.
So it was good for our team to know that we have still some work to do, and because it's always making everybody faster if we work more and harder.
Yeah. Moving towards the end of the year, you won the championship, obviously, but I do also remember when we talked earlier, like in the year and late last year, about your step up to WRC. and I asked it, how important was it to win the championship, and you said it's not so important, it's about experience, and eventually, you know, the one that you want to win is the World Rally Championship. But how did it feel to become a world champion at the age of 19?
It felt good because anyway, like you said, this season there was big pressure on us. So it's not so nice to go to some season and everybody thinks that it's so easy just to get it. And then you still have some problems and you need to fight for it. But then, like in summer, we show the pace and we show that we can finish the rallies, we can win many events, like 4 WC events and like Bohemia also, 5 wins in a row. And then again, Germany, small mistake, but it was good that it happened. Also, pace note mistakes, so it's mistakes that we need to learn from, because it's better to have the mistake now than in WC car. So it was really nice season, and also it was nice to get the win at the end, because everybody is waiting for it, and when everybody is waiting for it so hard, you are waiting for it also. So you just want to get the job done, and in Wales it was nice to get it done.
Yeah, and it's a nice rally to win it on as well. It's a tough one, isn't it, Wales?
Yeah, Wales is a nice one, and there would have been really big fight, like we saw on Friday with Mats. And then it was really unfortunate that they had some problems. But that's also rally at some scale that you need to have the best team and car and also the driver in the in the places. But it would have been really nice to fight the whole rally.
This, and now we move forward, and Toyota, you drove the car for 2 days last week in the French Alps. Tell me about that.
Yeah, the first test with Toyota was quite interesting, I have to say. It was first time for me in the car since 2016. I was driving the test version, so basically totally different car now. And for sure the WC cars are fast. There is a lot to learn from the aerodynamics and all the central diffs and everything what we don't have in the R5 car. So it's not only the power and that, so there is many things what we need to learn in the beginning of the season.
It is, you know, you talked about Skoda being like a WRC team in this level, but when you go up to that level, there is so much more data, there's so much more everything, isn't there, to learn about. Is that quite difficult to look at the setup options that you've got with the Yaris?
Yeah, actually, that is a really interesting part for me, and I was really looking forward for this part of the WRC cars that we can do more with the cars, and we can adjust them more. And I was really happy to see in the test that it's just how I was imagining it. And for sure, there's many things to learn, but it's always, at least with Toyota, it was nice to see that the engineers and everybody was working really well and helping me as a new driver to come to the team. And everything went really well. We was doing my setup already from the beginning, and we started to do everything like the correct way, even though still learning the car, but it was nice to know that and see that what all the things what we can do.
But tell me now, we're sitting on the start line of the test stage last week. You put it into stage mode and you drop the clutch and go the launch. What was it like? I mean, what was going through your mind that finally, still only 19, you have arrived at the top of our world?
Yeah, it was a nice feeling, I have to say. It was everything I was hoping for, always to be the factory driver in the WC car. And it was also feeling the same way what I was imagining it, because it has been the dream, and I'm always doing this stuff that I'm looking all these things what I'm gonna do.
Yes.
So I'm gonna do it better, and it's like one kind of training. Thing to do, so everything was feeling and going like I was imagining it. So it was nice to feel that this is the moment, and it's going like I was
like you hoped. Perfect. And did you see Ogier or Elvin during the test? Did you get a chance to talk to them much?
No, because I was starting the test. But we will drive now some other tests, and we will be there at the same time, so it will be more interesting.
And what the big question, I guess, looking ahead to 2020 is, what do you think? What is possible? What does a good year for Calle Rovanpera look like?
I think for me it's difficult to say it at this point. so many people are asking it, what is the goal?
Yeah.
But there is not so much for me to put any goals on. Mm. But I think for me it's just learning the car in the beginning of the year. I just want to be relaxed and learning the car in 4 or 5 events of the season, the first ones. And for me, I always want to be fast. So after that, I just want to start to show the speed and start to be somehow fast and compete with the guys. That is really important for me always. Mm. And I just hope that is the point where we do it. Like, at least in this point, we have to do it. We can do it maybe already earlier or not, I don't know, but we still need more experience and learn the car and everything, but I want to be fast at least in the end of the season.
Yeah. Now, I spoke to your dad last week, and he was telling me that even when you go on holiday, there is still a car involved somewhere. It is very difficult for you to relax, but we are now coming up to Christmas. What does Kelly Rovanpera do on Christmas Day?
Good question. It depends. I think I'm gonna do some snowmobiling.
Right. So there's still an engine involved.
Yes. It's always. I always do like motorsports. So I will maybe go to Lapland to do that.
Yeah.
And then some family and friends time. And now it's really good time for us to train physically for next year.
Yeah.
So I think training and having fun with friends and like I always want to do also the normal things, but normal my age.
Yeah.
Guys and
So you got a McDonald's drive-through maybe?
Hmm?
McDonald's
yes,
drive-through?
Yes, I think I will do it many times. So just having fun with friends and preparing for next year.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously we have seen a real sort of changing of the guard in Finnish drivers in WRC. Jari Mäntylä has maybe we see him on 2-5 rallies next year, but full-time career-wise it looks like he is not going to drive next year. How does that feel that, you know, Jari Mäty is somebody that has been in WRC almost as long as you've been alive, and you're now taking over from him?
Yeah, it's for me it's a bit sad that Jari Mäty is going, because I really like him as a driver and as a person. He's really one of the nicest guys I know.
Yeah.
And he's really a proper driver. It's a bit sad that Jari Mäty didn't have so good seasons, mm-hmm. or a few past seasons, because he's really one of the fastest and like proper drivers of the of the category. And but rallies like this, mm-hmm. and I really hope that Jari Mäty can get some rallies and something in the future also, because I know he wants to drive.
Yes.
So then I really hope that he can drive, because he really likes rally. He's like the proper rally guy.
He is, absolutely. And we've seen, you know, in Jyväskylä every summer, when Jari Mäty goes well, when he wins, you know, the whole city wins, doesn't it?
Yes, he's a really amazing guy.
And now that, if we don't see, okay, we have Lappi maybe and Teemu Suninen as well, but can you imagine, I mean, perhaps is that the next goal, a Finland win? What would that feel like?
Yeah, I think the home event is the event what you want to win, of course. But like, I think this year we have better chance to be higher in the position in some other rallies than Finland, because Finland is the most the race where you need most the confidence, and you need to use the aerodynamics and everything. And it's still not so many races before that, so I think it's easier to get better position in some slower gravel rally, I think so.
Yeah.
In some slow gravel rally, and than Finland. Of course, I hope we can do well in Finland, but it's like you really need to be confident and you need to be faster. So it's easier, I think, in some other rally. But I hope we can do well in some events this year.
Yeah. Well, I say thank you very much for the time,
thank you.
I wish you all the best for next year.
Thank you.
So that was Kelly. We were at the Skoda Motorsport press conference in Prague. Fabulous evening. And the other guy that I spoke to was Chris Ingram, Britain's European rally champion. And a very, very interesting interview with Chris. You know, we are really cracking on. We're very, very into a hugely long podcast now. We're massively over time. But I tell you what, let's talk to
What does this matter, David?
For the listeners, I was going to say the readers, but for the listeners, this is our Christmas present. It's gone on a bit, but they've got a couple of weeks to listen
what
to it.
What else are you going to do?
Well, exactly.
You know, you don't want to listen to mother-in-law, you know, drunk on eggnog, do you?
No.
Might as well listen to us, drunk on petrol fumes.
Actually, one point I did raise with Chris towards the end of the interview, and I tell you what, why don't you have a listen to Chris now, and then we can catch up with what I said to him at the end, so I'm not going to spoil it for you. So here's Chris. So as I mentioned, I'm here at the Skoda Motorsport Conference. We've spoken to Kelly Rovanpera. Now, equally important is Mr. Chris Ingram, European Rally Champion, who is sitting with me now and looking resplendent in his TalkSport WRT shirt. Chris, now, first question. I have to say, obviously, a great, great season for you this year, but what on earth is happening to Manchester City?
I've been trying to avoid it at all costs, actually.
I'm sure. You're definitely going to have a better year, or you've had a better year than they're having, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. And they've actually noticed what we've achieved.
Really?
And they're inviting us to the next couple of matches. We might even have the car on display soon.
Wow. You might even get a game. Some of those boys are playing.
Because I think they need something to celebrate, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. And you've certainly had something to celebrate this year. I mean, what... Talk us through it. I mean, what? Maybe we start at the end. I mean, that unbelievable final stage in Hungary. What was that feeling like when you came over the line with that? How far through were you when you got the puncture?
So it was a 27-kilometer stage. I got to the start line and the heavens opened. Torrential rain. It was going dark. There was patches of fog drifting over the road. I was so nerve, the most nerve-wracking feeling. You know, I was comfortably in third. All he had to do was finish the stage. I had a minute 30 buffer to fourth. So all I had to do was drive through the stage. That's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
So I was so, I can't tell you how nervous I was, you know, going into that.
What does that do to you? Do you then get quite stiff behind the wheel?
Really? Massively. Because in my opinion, the first half of the year, I drove the worst I've ever driven because of this pressure that's turned into being tense behind the wheel.
Yeah.
And just...
It can't come naturally, can it?
No, and there was just no way I even could have known how to relax because I was just under so much pressure that I put most of it under myself. So, at every stage now, I have to try to relax as much as possible and then it comes.
Yeah.
And it's the weirdest thing, but these last few rallies I've really... noticed it and it's been really good for my driving. So like we were controlling the rally pretty comfortably, you know, considering we only needed the third, even though we'd already had three punches up to that point. No idea how we got them. Half of the rally was gravel, like I just said. It was muddy, horrible conditions, huge logs on the inside of corners. It was a real dangerous, unique rally. So going into the last stage, like I said, 27 kilometres, the worst conditions you can imagine. The first 10K was just wet tarmac, not muddy. And then you do 13-14 kilometres in a forest, like Rally GB on gravel and mud.
Goodness,
and then there's about...
On slicks?
Yeah.
Oh, yo.
And then there was probably 3-4 kilometres to the end of the stage on tarmac. So we got the puncher right at the start of the gravel section. No idea how we got it. Just I honestly was driving so slowly just to get through to the finish. So slowly that you can't imagine. And we still got the puncher. I thought we also had a puncher there in the morning, which we changed.
Right.
We dropped 2 minutes. And of course it was dark now. So there's no way I was gonna risk changing
Stopping.
It in the dark.
Changing. No.
With only a minute 30. So I just carried on as flat out on a front right puncture,
which is a nightmare, isn't it? You know, a rear puncture, you can kind of just keep the car pointing vaguely straight and pull it through. But
and it was me and Ross were talking throughout the whole stage because it was so foggy.
Yeah.
By the end of the stage, I thought, you know, this will be okay. It's so foggy. Everyone else is going to be slowing down. I'm still pushing.
Yeah.
And we're having moments and having to use the handbrake to slow the car down on most of the fast stuff. It was mental. And we got to the end. I thought, to be honest, it was okay.
Yeah.
I thought we wouldn't have lost it. And then Callum Devine was in fifth, but he took 2 minutes out of us. So he jumped ahead of us, dropping us to fourth.
Yeah.
He'd had an unbelievable run. So we thought, oh my God, we've lost it. This is shocking. typical, we've lost it again.
So you got like over this. The line, and somebody said that you saw Devine's time, did the maths, worked it out, and then how long did you have to wait?
Well, they said, you need to wait for luck, you know, you need to wait for luck. You know, I went, I'm not waiting. I've had enough heartbreak this year.
Yeah.
So I drove 200 metres down the road and we stopped to change the puncture. But a photographer ran down the road after us and said, Lucky Nook's not come through. So the car behind Lucky Nook had come through first. And then Lucky Nook came in just behind. Lucky Nook had a puncture, front right puncture as well.
Yeah.
So there's obviously something in that road. We had a front right puncture in the morning.
Yes.
So there's obviously something there that's spiking people's tyres, if you know what I mean. So we're thinking, has he come second? Because if he's dropped a second, we dropped. Oh, that's, we've won it.
Yeah.
We're trying to work it out for 15 minutes. There's no phone signal.
Oh man.
Nobody can get through to Rally HQ. Yeah. It's just mental. And then. Julian Porter got on the phone to Chris Rawls and said that we'd won it, and it was just.
But those 15 minutes must have been just the longest 15 minutes of your entire life.
Because we 100% thought we'd lost it for the first 5-10 minutes, and then it started to be like,
And we should. I mean, this is probably a good time, talking of heartbreak, to rewind to Barham this year, where it was 0.3 seconds.
Yeah.
Cost you €100,000.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we didn't really have a good run at the start of the year. Like I said, I was just putting so much pressure on myself. I just declined massively. And Mahrez took full advantage of that, and he won in Poland when I retired. We got sand in the radiator and overheated the engine. He won in Rome, where I just had the worst rally of my life. I just drove terribly because just puts too much pressure on myself, and it disaster anyway. That's the end of story. Going into Barham, everyone said there's no way you're going to beat Mahrez here. Even my team was saying, you know, you're going to have to pull something special out of the bag to beat Mahrez here. He's got
much experience.
He wants to
there.
Show everyone. Well, I have as well, so I was quietly confident I had a chance. But like, he had all the home support and everything, but it was just the most incredible fight. I pulled out a big lead, like 10, 15 seconds, I think, early on. But there was this one stage, which I had a barrel roll on a few, 3 or 4 years ago, in the last time I had a big crash on this stage. And it's always put me off it. And I just can't get confident in there. And I dropped 15 seconds to him both times through the stage. But I was quicker than him on every other stage of the rally.
Yeah. It's a proper psychological thing in there.
Yeah. So he... I was leading going into the last day, second behind Kopecky, and we were having a mega, apart from that one stage, it was going perfectly to plan. But there was a few stages, I had a half spin and sort of stalled the car on one stage, so Mahrez had got 7 seconds back on us again, so there was like 1 second between us for the last four stages. And on the last one, it was just obviously we're both just flat out, and I felt like I overheated the tyres quite early on, and he took about, I think, no, there were, I was leading by 0.6 of a second, he took 0.9 of a second out of us in the last stage, winning by 0.3.
How on earth do you begin to pick yourself up from that? Because I mean, we should perhaps put it into context that 100,000 was going to pay for the last two rounds, wasn't it?
And pay for debts.
Yeah, exactly.
From previous rallies.
Yeah, and 0.3 seconds, and you lost it.
For the first few hours, I was absolutely beyond devastated.
Yeah.
But then I learned that we were leading the championship by a point.
Yeah.
So I immediately turned my attention to that. And to be honest, when people bring it up, you obviously look back, but I've not looked back.
No,
I don't feel
can't.
Any sadness towards. Even going into these offices, I didn't care about losing that money. I just focused so much on doing the best job I possibly could.
Yeah.
Because I did a really good job in Barham, even though we didn't win it. Mm. And I was proud of that. And I got a lot of self-belief back.
Yeah.
And my driving came back. And then we had a really good result in Cyprus, second behind Nasser, even though I drove slowly and it was a tactical approach. And then in Hungary, I think we drove really well as well. We did what we had to do. And the punches were unlucky, but apart from that, we were we did a good job. So,
do you feel, are you back now? Do you feel that you've got this ability to relax and are you driving more naturally now?
Yeah, but I've still never had the chance to show my true speed.
Yeah. Because we saw you come to WRC 2 in Turkey last year.
Yeah.
And you know, you were great on some stages, but very early in that event it was about just finishing.
Yeah.
And there was a result there, wasn't there?
Because how can I give it more risk when one crash could be the end? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's been the story of this year, hasn't it, really?
Forever, really. I mean, there's been the odd stage through the year where I felt like if I push in here, the risk's less, so I can, and then we've been fastest.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have that opportunity next year. I need to get some proper support behind me that I can show my true speed.
That's the point. You still haven't. And you've got a lot more to come from Chris Ingram.
Yeah. Massively.
Yeah. What's the aim for next year?
I'd love to be in WRC too. And I think with our approach, the way the team are working out, my co-driver Ross, I think we're such a good team that we could be really strong in WRC too. And dare I say it, win another big title.
Yeah.
Even though I've not got the experience, I do believe that if we had the right support, we can. So that's obviously the dream for next year. But we'll have to see, because TalkSport are keen on doing the European Championship again and winning it in a more dominant way.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because, you know, you could now go back, and with the experience of ERC and a four-wheel drive car, you could go back and really give it a good go and show what you can do. But equally, you need to make that transition at some point to WRC, don't you?
I think 100% we need to be doing at least a limited WRC 2 programme. At least. And you know, go for it on those rallies.
Yeah.
Forget finishing and for now, actually show some proper speed.
But equally, that's so difficult as well, because if you go to, say, somewhere like Sweden, you know, or Finland, or even Portugal, these kind of places, you need so much experience. Yeah. And you know, it's easy to get caught out, isn't it, when you're pushing hard?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're competing against guys that have done it five,
exactly.
six, seven times.
I think ideally, you know, if money was no object, we'd go and do the overseas rallies plus the WRC rounds I've done, which are GB, Turkey and Germany, because that put us in a pretty even field with everyone else.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you said, going to Portugal, where all these other guys have been several times, that's really tough.
Yeah, it is.
To compete there.
It is. But, I mean, this obviously, it's been a big, big year. But if you had to pick out one moment, I guess it is a championship, isn't it? Finding out at that moment that you were a champion. And then, what was it like?
To be honest, all the last three rallies, because Barron was a turning point for myself, because I realised what I was doing wrong all that time. Cyprus, we blagged an unbelievable result just by trundling through the rally.
Yeah.
But that moment in Hungary, we'll never forget that.
And then going to the FIA Gala as well. Was that pretty special to stand among those people?
Yeah, amazing, definitely. And it's sort of sunk in there, you know, talking to Lewis Hamilton and
really
saying congratulations, because I sort of told him what I'd done, and he said, that's an amazing achievement, congratulations, man. And he's got into a bit, it's sinking in now.
Yeah.
Even though I do feel like, I did, like I said, it was an ambition to win it, which we've done it, but now it's the chance to actually show who I am.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's
if we can get the funding together.
That's almost...
this is just the start.
The foundation, isn't it, of your
exactly.
Of your now your, the career. So really almost next year is more important to use the springboard and...
Yeah, this is like a perfect way to start the next chapter with that title in the bag commercially.
Yeah,
it's a mega thing, and now we can go for it.
Yeah, and what's it like when you come back from something like the gala?
Yeah,
and you go back to sort of everyday life in Manchester. I mean, I guess you've got a lot of training and everything to do, and you're busy with that.
I've been flat out with meetings, and I've got a great team of people now, so it's good. There's obviously massive highs and lows, which I think for every driver it's the same. Because you can't match these highs that you get in a rally car in normal life. So when my girlfriend wants to go out one night, it's just
it's not the same, is it?
No.
It's not, you
even
know, a night on the town.
Even
though
I want it to be, it's not quite driving a rally car.
No.
Which is quite difficult sometimes, but...
Yeah. But that's, I mean, essentially, that's your life right now, isn't
yeah.
it? And it has
and that's
to be,
what we live for. Like,
yeah.
Just talking about it makes me smile.
Yes.
Just thinking about the moments where we're flat out in the dark with Ross, having moments... Honestly, it's just the best thing. It just fills me with... joy just thinking about it.
Yeah. No, I just asked last question to Callie there was what does Christmas Day look like for Callie Rompera? What does Christmas Day look like for Chris Ingram?
Be with my family. My dad's been ill lately, so hopefully he'll be better. Yeah, to be honest, just it's probably the worst thing about me, but I just don't stop thinking about rallying.
Yeah.
So I'll probably try and switch off.
Yeah,
for a bit and just enjoy.
Yeah, Queen's Speech.
Other things. Yeah.
Really?
I love the Queen.
Gavin and Stacey?
Nah.
No.
Nah.
That's so yesterday, isn't it? Well, Chris, I have to say, what an absolute joy to talk to you
Thanks a lot,
on such an occasion, and I look forward to reporting on you next year.
Thank you.
So I think one of the most important points to come out of that interview was that Chris Ingram will be watching the Queen's Speech.
Listen, he is a big royalist, you know.
He's
very proud of his country.
Yeah.
What I found interesting...
is that he doesn't watch Gavin and Stacey.
He doesn't watch... Well, he's too young. He probably doesn't know who they are. I was astonished that he didn't go Gavin and who, you know.
Yeah,
Gavin
true,
and Stacey's 10 years ago.
Will you watch it?
Of course I will. I think it's the funniest thing on telly.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
I love them.
Yeah.
You know, they might be Welsh, but I love them. Really do. One of them is, anyway.
Is there a problem there?
No, I like the Welsh. I love them. My granddad was half Welsh.
Are we
Welsh
getting to the...
No, what I was going to say
not
is...
Not to the middle
what
of your
I
issue with Alvin Evans.
I listened to those two interviews back to back. They were both fascinating, really good interviews. But I found it interesting, they are such very different characters. Such very different characters, Ingram and young Rompera. But, you know, they come from very different backgrounds, you know. We've always said in rallying, you've got to have talent. You know, you won't make it to the top without talent. You've got to have money. You've also got to have opportunity.
Yeah.
And someone like Rompera, clearly with that name, has had the opportunity. Solberg has that opportunity. Young Schwartz, who's coming through, has that opportunity. Ingram has had to battle every step of the way. He's got the talent. He's never had the money. You know, there was a very big misconception early on in Ingram's career that he had family money. Let me tell you, I've known him since his days in that Twingo. And they've not had two pennies to rub together.
No.
You know, it is a wonderfully uplifting story how that family has worked with his dad. And his dad is, at times, has been a very divisive figure. But what you can never question is his dad's loyalty.
Yeah,
you know, his dad has done
total
everything
support.
Possible to support his son.
Yeah.
And he did things differently in the early days that paid off. He took him to the European Championship rather than the British Championship. It paid off.
But did it?
But,
did it?
I mean, this is one of the questions, isn't it?
You know, where is he right now?
It paid off.
He's a European champion that nobody cares about. Within our sport.
I think, you know, that's a valid point. That is a valid
point. It's very harsh.
And it's not because he's a European champion that no one cares about. It is because he's a European champion of a championship that no one cares about.
Yeah.
No one cares about the ERC. The ERC, sadly, has not... really enjoyed the renaissance that we all hoped it would under Eurosport. They've not managed to. They came off the back of a remarkably successful upstart championship,
which
was remarkably successful. And you look at the graduates from the IRC.
Yeah, and it engaged local importers. It just worked on every level, didn't it?
It worked.
But for me, one of the massive issues this year with ERC again is the events.
It's the events. They're not... potentially going to the right places. They're not managing to attract the young talent, but that's not Ingram's fault.
No,
Ingram has gone, and you mentioned the fact that he didn't win any rallies and he didn't win so many stages, but he very well explains why that was, and again it shows real intelligence and craft that he was able to start the year with one objective in mind, and he did what he had to do to win that championship.
He failed halfway through, though, didn't he? That's very, very harsh to say that he failed.
When did that fall off?
I'm not entirely sure.
Let's hope that didn't fall off.
Hours ago.
Yeah.
Cole's mic is back. It fell off. Fortunately, I spotted. I could have done us all a favour and hidden it then.
You could have cut the cord. Halfway through, you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, so when he missed Barham, and he missed that winning the junior thing by 0.3 seconds. But, you know, I feel I'm being harsh on him now, because one thing that this lad has never had is a fair crack. You know, he's had good cars, and you know, this year the support from TalkSport has been unbelievable. You know, massive backing. Yeah. And when I talk about a fair crack, I mean to get to the start of a stage and say, right, this is it. Yeah. The brain's coming out, and I'm going as fast as I can down this bit of road. He is constantly thinking in every corner.
And he's thinking too much. And you can tell that from your interview. Yeah. And he is thinking too much. And that's, you know, the natural talent is there with Ingram. There's still potential there. The speed is there.
But if he doesn't get the opportunity next year to go balls out and just to win rallies, he should go home. Because he has got to the level in his career. He's a European champion. You know, to the man in the street in Manchester, that's massive. And, you know, fair dinkum, it's a really good thing to call yourself a European champion. But if he can't build on that, and he doesn't have the budget and the wherewithal to build on it next year and go back to ERC maybe, or to WRC preferably, and say, right, come on, boys, I'm going to show you.
Well, you need to make decisions in life, and you need to be brave enough to realise when it's not going your way. Now, there are drivers who have never competed in the WRC who make a very good living out of rallying, who have won the British Championship.
Yeah.
You would argue perhaps a lesser championship to the ERC, and who will make, from winning that championship, a living from rallying for the rest of their days.
Yeah.
And these are the decisions that people like Chris might be faced with in 12 months' time. I think it's still 12 months too premature to make that decision for him, because if he has the opportunity next year, if he does get the outings in the WRC, if he is allowed to go hell for leather, you know, and not have to worry about the repair bills, then it is possible that we might see Ingram setting times that are good enough to justify a little bit longer, and perhaps give us that glimmer of hope that he can go all the way. But at the same time, if it doesn't happen for him next year, he will have to make decisions. And those must be, for someone like Ingram, who lives and breathes, and he talks about that very well in your interview, lives and breathes rallying, and has only ever wanted to be world champion since, you know, day dot. Very, very difficult decisions to make. But he doesn't have to do it yet. I think there's you know, there is still potentially very, very good days ahead of young Chris.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I think that is probably a good place to leave it. So I will wish all of our listeners a very happy Christmas. Don't forget, through the festive period, you can read everything on autosport.com. Buy Motorsport News. Double issue out right now. It's huge. Lots of erroneous top tens in there. If you want the real top ten, obviously you've got to go to the Autosport magazine. And we will see you all in the new year, getting ready for some Monte Carlo testing, and then, of course, round one in Monte. Colt, have a good Christmas.
Thank you very much, David. Yeah, and you too. Thank you very much for inviting me along today. It's been, as always, a pleasure to talk rallying with you.
Absolutely. And mince pies.
And hot chocolates and gallons of coffee and tea. It's been lovely. Thank you.
My pleasure. So thank you very much. That was me, David Evans, saying goodbye to Gravel Notes for this year, and see you on the other side.